You're listening to Megiddo Radio. Megiddo Radio is a radio ministry of Megiddo Media. For more, visit our website at MegiddoRadio.com. That's MegiddoRadio.com.
Everybody, welcome. This is Paul Flynn with Megiddo Radio for the 2nd of June 2018. Thank you all for tuning in. On tonight's program, we're going to be looking once again at the recent vote in the Republic of Ireland, in which the country which I currently live in voted to amend or repeal, or appeal, not amend, the Eighth Amendment. The Eighth Amendment protected the rights of the unborn child and gave an equality before law of the mother and the unborn. And it's an incredibly sad situation. Two shows ago, I talked about this, and there's a review that was done on RTE on the Claire Byrne live program, which you're going to be looking at tonight, and also a few of the fallouts. Ireland was one of seven countries in the world that did not allow abortion, which is it's staggering where the nations of the world are, that they allow the most defenseless in our society to be killed in the name of progress or compassion. And I remember commenting on Twitter there recently, it's just astonishing how socialist, leftist, communist, whatever you want to call it, and usually there's not a huge massive difference, totalitarians of different stripes who believe that the state is God and whatever the state says, and as long as it's law, or as long as the majority of people believe such a thing, therefore makes it morally right. What the Nazis did in Nazi Germany was legal in that country. Doesn't make it right. Especially the eugenics and various types of people being executed in the womb because they didn't have the right genetic traits. Now you're going to have this in the future. There's no getting away from this. You know, people, this happens in every country. And then the response is, oh, but we're Ireland. As if somehow we're, you know, extra special and all this kind of stuff. There's a virtue signaling overload. Maybe I just didn't notice it before. Maybe it was already there. It's like we're trying to outdo Sweden, which is not a good thing if you're aware of what the Swedes are allowing in their country. But anyway, so we're going to look at a few things, going to look at the program. Basically, what the Irish media is saying is this. The debate is over. And this is what the Yes campaigners are saying as well. The debate is over. I'm so glad, as one of the members of the Dáil, which is basically another name for Parliament, said that, I'm so glad this is over. Yeah, this is over. For them, they say, oh, you see that? I mean, it's interesting they never thought it was over back in 1983 when the pro-choice side lost and the Eighth Amendment was put into the Irish Constitution to give equal rights both to the unborn child as to the mother. But be that as it may, the issue here is, I mean, just because the majority of people support a position does not mean it's morally right. If the majority of people want to, if you have 51% of the people want to kill the other 49%, it doesn't make it morally right. Now, I don't know what percentage of the Germans during the Nazi regime supported what the policies were, but just say it was 51%, does that make it right? Anyway, let's go through some of the arguments that were used. This is kind of a review. But I don't think this is unique to Ireland. But I'll be honest, I've never gotten hugely involved in the pro-life campaign for many, many years, often because it was often very ecumenical in nature. And often people would set aside theological, important theological distinctions and disagreements under the pro-life banner. You know, between Rome and charismatics and doctrinally sound Protestants, and they would just kind of see these issues no longer as important. whenever you put something in front of the gospel, now, this is sinful, and this is wrong. The church needs to speak against sin and not remain silent. And this is, in a certain extent, a gospel issue. What do we mean by that? It's sin. And the people who wish to... The law of God needs to be brought to bear on the conscience to expose the fact that all of sin falls short of the glory of God, so that all need to repent. This is a grievous sin. We should speak against murder, which is the sixth commandment. Thou shalt not kill. And you bring that to bear with the hope and the prayer that the Spirit of God will work in their hearts, bringing them to repentance and faith towards our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. So don't think that this is politics. But no, this is sin. Let's talk plainly about it. This is sin, and we are supposed to speak out against sin in whatever area of life. We're not to give our seal of approval to it, otherwise we partake of those wicked devices. We're going to play this clip, but we're going to see, it's the entire program, but we'll see how much we can get through of it and comment on it. And there's also some news stories about the price, and it looks like the state is probably going to end up paying a lot for the murder of the unborn child. Tax money, isn't that wonderful? Because they can really ram this stuff through, especially when you get about, 66% of the vote. 2-1 majority they got. The pro-abortion side. And they knew what they were getting. They knew it wasn't some in exceptional circumstances or anything like that. This is, they knew, the electorate knew, that they were getting abortion on demand. But on the yes side, there was no mention of the baby in the womb. None. It was all about the mother and her decisions, her life, and all this kind of stuff. And also we'll look at what the health minister in Ireland, Simon Harris, said about GPs who would not refer on those women who want to kill their children, and they, rightly so, wouldn't want to refer them on to another GP who's going to kill. You know, could you imagine if somebody came to you and said to you, can you help me kill someone? And you said, no, that's wrong. Okay, you don't want to do it. Could you give me a number for another guy who's willing to kill somebody for me? No. And that's seen as an issue with Simon Harris, but we'll look at that later on. So let's look at this from the Claire Byrne live program.
The result of the referendum at the weekend was definitive. The Irish people have chosen to repeal the Eighth Amendment. The next step is the process of legislating for the regulation of the termination of pregnancy in Ireland. Now, the minister who will steer that through...
So it's a very... Do you know, make it sound as technical as possible. The regulation of the termination of pregnancy. Would you ever... Again... Let's look at the removal of the Jews. They're going to say, oh, well, let's do some mass murder here. No, let's do some hygiene. Let's do some cleanup, you know, genetically, because this is the last wrong, and these are the subhumans. Actually, I probably think that the Nazis probably had a higher view of Jews than we do of babies in the womb who are unintended. And where do the majority of these unintended babies come from? Promiscuous lifestyles promoted by the same kind of philosophy that is leading to this kind of, it's leading to this issue. I saw a poster the other day. I don't know if the statistic is true or not. They say 1 in 3 women in Ireland will face a crisis pregnancy. Now, what percent of that is going to be, you know, the rape cases and all this kind of stuff? Tiny percent. And how much of, it's probably like less than 1%. I don't know the exact numbers, but it's a tiny, tiny percent. Incest, all this kind of stuff. So the vast majority of this 1 in 3 statistics provided by, obviously, a leftist group, how is it happening exactly? You see, in Ireland, it's kind of like we can just drink, and the country drinks way too much. We are, I mean, I know there's the stereotype, but people don't realize, I will not walk, like, I remember when I was living in Italy years ago, I remember it was great to just to walk through a town, a small village or a town in Italy, and they weren't falling all over each other, drunk and all this kind of stuff. And you could do that. You know, they would sip in a glass of wine for a couple of hours. That was great. In Ireland, and I did it myself before I was saved by the Lord, it wasn't uncommon for me to, I don't know, half a bottle of whiskey or something like that before I left the house. Now, I'm not saying that to whatever. I'm just saying, and unfortunately, I was a very heavy drinker, but I wasn't the heaviest drinker that I knew. I knew people worse than me. I'm not saying everybody was worse than me. And do you know what? In most countries, I would have been viewed as an alcoholic. In Ireland, no. You know, you got a bit too much and psychological, blah, blah. Ireland has a massive, massive issue with alcohol. And even the people who speak about it, I don't want to get down this rabbit trail, but anyway, because in Ireland, they want to do everything, no consequences, just do whatever. But of course, internationally, they're like, you see the Irish, they're just covered and, you know, they're so much fun. Yeah. Because we don't like, there's no debate. There's no debate that goes on in this country. It frustrates me. It has always frustrated me before being a Christian. Anyway. Let's continue.
Through the Oireachtas is Simon Harris, and he'll be joining me very shortly. We'll have lots to talk about with him. But first, I want to go to our panel. Alva, you're very welcome, co-founder of Together for Yes. Much of the loudest cheers at Dublin Castle on Saturday were for yourself. I don't know if you feel today whether the dust has settled on the campaign or not, but I just want to know how you are.
Thank you, Claire. I am extremely well and still feeling very relieved, very pleased, and enormously proud of our electorate, enormously proud of the people of Ireland for making such a very strong decision to vote to repeal the Eighth Amendment after, I was thinking to myself, what must have been one of the longest national discussions ever of a proposed law. And I think that that's really important.
Probably says it all, really. Longest discussion. I don't know if she's referring back to 1983 or the decades or whatever. They don't seem to. One of the things that really frustrated me as well during this campaign, it's just too heated. I can't wait for this to be over. Okay, this is the slaughter of children. As long as this is going on and the state is okay with it. Now, here's the thing. So people say, you know, this is still happening anyway. And they're going to England and killing their child, or, you know, as they say, aborting their child. And let's just call it what it is. Killing. We don't need to export our problems. Yeah, we shouldn't be exporting our problems. What do we do if somebody goes to another land and kills another person and comes home? What do you think should be done with that person? This is the ending of a life. I know it's been said in the pro-life campaign that there's no desire to uphold laws that would threaten 14 years in prison. That's too lenient. It's too lenient. Now, there's no desire anybody in government to even uphold that. But why, if it's wrong to if you get a 5-year-old toddler and kill them, drug them, rip their arms limb from limb, that would be seen as a horrendous crime. The Liberals would be calling out for, in the name of child abuse, many years in prison. But if you do it within the womb, it's okay. It's a woman's right to choose.
And, you know, when you say, has the dust settled? I think when something as momentous as this happens, and I believe it was hugely momentous, and I expect other people do too, you are a little shell-shocked at the beginning. You are a bit stunned. And I'm thinking that this week is probably going to be the settling time for so many of us as we come to understand over the coming weeks and months and probably years what this really means in terms of our history as a people, what it means for us for the future, and for me always, of course, what it means for women in this country, north and south.
Because I was chatting to you just before we sat down here, and you were talking about the campaigns that you've been involved in over the years. Yeah. And how difficult they were. I mean, how did this one compare?
Well, I think the one I was mentioning to you specifically was divorce in 86, which some of you will remember, and how I felt at that time that I would really emigrate. And it had been quite a difficult, it was really a difficult campaign. This one, it felt very different somehow.
Now, just to comment briefly, look, a divorce is wrong if there's only two grounds biblically that have been given for divorce. One is abandonment, and one is if the other person is unfaithful. So there shouldn't be a blanket no divorce in any situation at all, but there's two situations where it is allowed biblically. One is abandonment by the spouse, or in the other one where sexually unfaithful. Otherwise, if you're the person who leaves without good grounds to do so, or with those two reasons only, well, it's wrong. But again, everything's being associated with Roman Catholic Church. And look, the Roman Catholic Church has been hypocritical. They would often, you know, say, oh, to keep the divorce rate down or whatever, they'd have a lot of annulments. I don't know if that's still going on to modern time, but it did. It certainly did before. But I digress.
We knew that this was going to be tough. We knew it would be hard fought. What I think maybe we hadn't quite understood was that it was going to be hard thought as well, because I think this really was a nation, a country, a people coming into a vocabulary where it could...
Why is it hard thought? Because you won. Because, yeah, the left is always like this. You agree with me, you're smart. You disagree with me, you're stupid. It was just the same mantras, the same nonsense over and over. Women's autonomy, my body, my choice, same stuff. There was no, they avoided completely talking about the unborn child in the womb. I'm not aware of any case where they dealt with, there probably was a few here and there. And I'm sure some of the pro-life groups have maybe had those clips on YouTube, whatever. But there was definitely an avoidance of the issue and just focusing completely on the mother. Where there's two people there.
Think about something which is private and which has been, as Fintan wrote about, so...
Yeah, if people talk about private. If I kill my child... I've got 2 3-year-olds. If I kill my 3-year-old in my house, can I claim that that's private? Really? Because you can make exactly the same arguments. They're dependent on me. Oh, but they're another person. Well, it's another person as well in the womb. You can make the argument you make for killing a baby in the womb is the same kind of argument you can make for killing a toddler.
Powerfully has been so secret, has been kept so off the radar, has been kept so deeply silenced for so long, that we had to find our way towards thinking that out loud and working out how we felt about it.
Okay, I want to come over to Alison O'Connor now. What about the people who voted no?
The people who voted no, I'm sure, feel exceptionally disappointed today, and it's their democratic entitlement to vote no. And it is, you know, roughly it is a third of the population, and I guess one particular constituency, Donegal, which voted no. So I suppose, you know, and I think that these are people, I'm sure, who thought about it very strongly and felt very deeply. And I think it's the realisation for those people as well, maybe, that it is, the Taoiseach referenced this in his speech, that they feel it's a different Ireland now and that think that things have changed. And I think they're right. I mean, I completely agree with Alva. It's a momentous thing. You know, I woke on Friday morning feeling sick at the notion of, even though the analytical part of my brain felt, you know, this is going to pass, no idea by how much. But the notion that, I think, how the sense of stress that we all carried, those of us who wished for a yes, that it wouldn't pass. And to walk into Dublin Castle on Saturday and to see Alva and her, the co-directors of Together for Yes. And it was a celebration. And I drank bubbles on Saturday night. But I wasn't celebrating abortion. No woman celebrates abortion.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I have the ability to kill my child. No woman celebrates abortion. Okay.
I was celebrating the freedom of women to have bodily autonomy.
To kill their child. It's like, again, it's like the person who votes in and says, you know what, could you imagine if you had slave owners and they said, my slave, my choice. And they said, I can kill my slave if I want to, because it's my choice. It's, you know, I want autonomy over my possessions and the slave is my possession. Could you imagine making this kind of an argument? And you say, oh, and then you sell, you know, just say you have a vote in the country, and the country votes that if the slave owner so wants, they can just kill the slave if they want to. And then they, just say, well, we weren't celebrating killing of slaves. We're celebrating the freedom of slave owners to just kill their slave. No, of course. Yeah, it makes complete sense. I don't think it makes too much sense either. No, doesn't know. Okay.
And if they needed an abortion to have one. And that's, for me, the seismic shift. And I
need it based on what? If you look at the reasons, we went through it in the last two programs ago, what the reasons were. You know, these red herrings that trot out are just a tiny, tiny percent. Tiny. There's always going to be those hard, horrible cases. But if a woman's been raped, why punish the child? They never talk about the punishment for rapists. The way the law has been set up and the way that, you know, and I remember I was having a conversation with somebody before and they just stopped the conversation because they realized where it was going to get kind of going. The model penal code, which came out of the sexual revolution and Alfred Kinsey's perverted, quote unquote, research, pseudo research. If you want more on that, go to look up a woman by the name of Dr. Judith Reisman, who's been doing research in this for decades. But through the perverted research from this man, they believed that they could, you know, rehabilitate the rapists and all this kind of stuff in prison, all this kind of stuff, or the rape and stuff that was caused by being too repressive. I mean, it sounds kind of familiar, doesn't it? Unfortunately, a lot of this stuff is mainstream, and it's not just Kinsey's own perversions. Now it's kind of mainstream. Hollywood even made a movie about Kinsey about 10 years ago. Liam Neeson. Yeah, Liam Neeson was the Irish actor who actually played Kinsey. Didn't see the movie or anything like that. I wouldn't advise anybody to watch it because it's probably perverse. But anyway, I'm trying to think. So Kinsey promotes this, you know, all the laws that came out of the model penal code in the United States and influenced countries around the world. Because you know, if America catch, you know, sneezes, everyone else in the world catches a cold. They're very influential in very many ways because it is the biggest, most powerful, most successful country in the world right now. There's no getting around that, whether people like that or not. It is true. But if you look at the model penal code, it reduced sentences and all this. This is why, long story short, what came out of the Alfred Kinsey and his perversions and all this kind of stuff, you know, where you get the quote-unquote 10% homosexual statistics and all this kind of stuff. Oh, and also, you know, in his research, oh, everybody's having abortions, so that should be legalized too. But in his promotion of all this kind of stuff, in the midst of that, why do you think that if somebody, you see these child rapists and all this kind of stuff, what did they get? What, 3 years? 3 years. Actually, some of them just get weird kind of 6 months suspended. You know, these kind of, how does this make any sense? A lot of it comes from Alfred Kinsey and his writings on sexual education. A lot of the sex ed stuff from around the world, the sick stuff that they try to push on kids, comes from Kinsey. I'm not saying everything. It comes from man's perverted heart and mind, of course. But he is the father of the sexual revolution and a major, major, they made a major impact. And you can just go to MegiddoRadio.com and look, type in the word Alfred Kinsey for more on that, or the word sexual revolution. I did a few programs on that, I think about two or three at least. So, yeah. So the rapist gets lower and lower number of years. But what happens? The child is, at the end of all this liberalization and all this kind of stuff, and look, it is a hardness of man's heart towards God. It is rebellion against God. This is at the core of all this stuff. But gradually as it goes along, who gets punished? The baby in the womb.
Feel so grateful for everyone else who did, and for all the men who voted yes, who care for women, and who are all...
They don't care for women. They do not care for women. No, you don't. Look, I know of people in my past, and they would put pressure on people. And I knew a guy years ago who got a woman pregnant, this is before, long before I was a Christian, and had no interest in being the father. They're the kind of people who are going to put pressure. And the statistics we were looking at about two programs ago, when we were looking at the aftermath of the Irish vote, about 25%, it fluctuates up and down, but 20 to 30% of the reasons women were having abortion was because of the partner. I think maybe it's a vested interest, because a lot of these guys are in Hollywood, where maybe, you know, a child might... You just see a lot of these Hollywood types. The career comes first. Star, fame, and all this kind of stuff, but...
So acknowledging that making babies takes two people, you know, and it's, to me, it's a maturity.
Making babies takes two people, but killing them... How about the father? Maybe the father doesn't want the child to be killed. No rights. Yes. Okay. Fathers have, you know, the you know, with feminism, it's always like, oh, we're, and at the end of it, men have zero rights, zero. The, you know, the Constitution or anything like that in countries doesn't protect the family unit. The father is not the head of the family anymore.
On our society, and I think that it'll be a long time before we really realise the significance of it and how it will sort of, how it will ripple out and the changes. I suppose even in the last week with those two dreadful murders of two women, and that, it just made it all feel, you know, all the more acute of Irish women needing this freedom, and on Saturday we got it.
Okay, David Quinn, to come to you. Obviously a no voter, a no campaigner.
Mm-hmm. David Quinn from the Iona Institute. Don't know a huge amount about him. I've seen him around over the years. In some ways, they are kind of a Roman Catholic organization from what I can see. And I remember, look, I saw them on campus. I was in University College Cork. That's for a very brief time. I was a terrible student when I was there, honestly. I bought into all the licentiousness and, I lived it up. And what I mean by that is, you know, opening week in UCC, they would tell you and joke about, oh, 1 in 4 have an STD. Yeah. That's, yeah. You know, the bad thing is, oh, 1 in 3 has a crisis pregnancy. But then you go to college and it's the university campuses that generally are going to vote for abortion. There's also a story there recently, I think it was UCD or was it Trinity? I think it was UCD, which is a university college, Dublin. And their students' union president was forced out of the position because she was pro-life. And you're going to see that. You're going to see those who are pro-life or anything just for being pro-life are going to be marginalized and they're going to be pushed out. And they are trying to say to this, you're not welcome. You had your say, this debate is over, and they're trying to shut everything and everyone down. They're trying to, it looks like, push these kind of buffer zones, trying to get the exact name of the kind of these zones around, exclusion zones, which would prevent anybody from protesting or anything like that outside of a death mill. And pray that that doesn't happen, brethren. I don't think we should be screaming at people going into these things and all this kind of stuff, but imploring them, the lovingly street preaching and giving them a way out and finding a way. I'm not saying I have the answers here, but the church should try to help, whether it's that they would keep the baby or give it up for adoption, or I don't know if it's possible if people could just say, you know, I'll adopt your child. I don't know what the laws are in Ireland on things like that. If the parent just said, okay, I'll let you adopt my children. I don't know. I've never looked into legality of things like that. But we should look into these things. And I'd far rather, you know, say, oh, why don't you adopt him? Yeah, I would. Seriously. Myself and my wife would love to have more children. Seriously. So, we should do whatever it takes. Make sure children lawfully, legally, of course, we're not just saying, oh, it's okay. Oh, there's a democratic decision. Now we're going to support it. Support the murder of unborn children. Are you serious? And just getting back to David Quinn and the Iona Institute, he was the only person on the panel, the 6 people on the panel. And you've got people from, I'll just try and get the list up here. Together for Yes.
Result of the...
Oh, sorry there. Okay, on the panel, Eva Smith, Together for Yes, obviously Yes campaigner. Mary Lou McDonald, Sinn Féin, voting for murder of unborn children. They've gone for a different way. They, 20 years ago, or 30 years ago, they were... bombing parts of Northern Ireland, and unfortunately, the Assembly in Northern Ireland, various different people made a horrendous decision to hand over the North to the IRA. You might say, oh, there's peace and all this kind of stuff. At what price? At what price? And this is, unfortunately, governments around the world do this. You have terrorists and they kill people and they get what they want eventually. So Mary Lou McDonald is leading that group. And Fintan O'Toole, Irish Times, Yes supporter, and has been very much quote unquote pro-choice for many, many years. Alison O'Connell, Irish Examiner, who was just speaking there. Larissa Nolan, a columnist who apparently voted no, but is completely toothless in her arguments and talks about, oh, let's, okay, I voted no, but let's support the decision. If you're really against abortion, there's no way you can support this. Okay? You can't have a situation where the majority of people can strip the humanity of any other group of people. If that's what democracy is, maybe we shouldn't be looking for democracy. We should look for a republic where people are created equal under the law. Is that a novel idea? And Larissa Nolan, a columnist, can't remember if I knew, but like she was probably, was she really on the other side? I'm sure they'd like to say, okay. And there wasn't much of a no presence. David Quinn of the Iona Institute was the only person with some kind of reasonable things to say on the program. And it's incredibly sad. Now, of course, you know, the old typical, oh, you're an institution, Roman Catholic Church and all that. I'm no fan of the Roman Catholic Church at all. If you've just type in the word Roman Catholicism into getaradio.com and you'll get plenty of programs on. Roman Catholicism is a synagogue of Satan. It is not part of a visible church. It is not a Christian church. It is apostate. It anathematized the true gospel in the 17th century. Since about at least the 8th century, maybe even earlier, the Christians, medieval Christians, the Waldensians and Albigensians, Albigensians in the south of France, Waldensians in like northern Italy, parts throughout Europe, identified the Pope of Rome as the Antichrist. And they very much kept the fire of the flame of the gospel burning in Europe. And a lot of that movement came out of, you know, the Diocese of Milan in northern Italy, refusing the authority of the Pope because they didn't believe it was biblical. Okay? Fast forward to the Reformation. They also held to this doctrine that the Pope of Rome is the Antichrist. And virtually all the 16th and 17th century confessions identify the Pope of Rome as the Antichrist. Now, be that as it may, what I'm saying is this. The Roman Catholic Church is the Bible identifies it positively as a hypocritical, outwardly, you could say in today's modern language, virtue signaling, talking about how wonderful she is as the spouse of Christ, she will, but inwardly is full of hypocrisy. And yes, it is a disgusting organization. From her doctrine of transubstantiation, which basically sees the wafer and the blood becoming the literal blood and body of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ in such a way that it is almost another sacrifice equivalent to Calvary. It is a blasphemy. So I have no time or no love for the Roman Catholic Church, but just because the Roman Catholic Church holds to a doctrine or believes something to be true does not make it, therefore, wrong. There are things that the Roman Catholic Church believes that are true. You can say a broken clock is right twice a day, and there might be something a leftist believes is true. Just because somebody holds a view does not mean it is wrong. And it's a complete fallacy to kind of go, oh, that's Roman Catholicism, that's the church, oh, therefore it's wrong. And what, because of the disgusting abuses that went on in the name of quote-unquote Christianity, it wasn't, in, you know, Christianity at all, in Ireland, within the Roman Catholic Church, in priests, nuns, and all this kind of stuff, disgusting stuff that went on, utter hypocrisy, this is the rebellion against that. And it is hard in its heart. I don't know, could you save in more? Because Ireland wasn't great before. People could talk about, I remember somebody on a YouTube video talking about, I'm sorry, but like, Americans really just need to be careful what they say about Ireland and just do their research. It's a bit of a complex situation. If you want to talk about Ireland as a Christian nation, not for centuries. Centuries. You know, this whole, we used to be a land of saints and scholars. Well, you know, that is kind of been and gone possibly as long as 800 years ago. I know Ireland was covenanted in the Solemn League and Covenant, which took place, when was it, 1643? Anyway, the 1640s, around the time of the Westminster Assembly. Yes, Ireland, the kingdoms of England, Scotland, and Ireland covenanted to obey God. However, much of Ireland was still Roman Catholic and still had issues and was still, yeah, there was, you know, pockets of a very, very Protestant and wanted to do this. But, okay, let's talk about the 1640s. Well, you had, you know, Irish Roman Catholics rounding up Protestants, any number between 100,000, we don't know the exact number, and 400,000, that the population of Ireland dropped dramatically in the 1640s. And, I mean, I've Jesuit writings in Latin talking about just go and kill them. I'm not talking about referring to Protestants. Now, Oliver Cromwell came over and stopped the bloodshed and threatened Rome with its cannons, and, well, that annoyed Rome to the point where now history's been turned on its head, and, well, now he's seen as a kind of a tyrant because Cromwell came over and stopped Irish Catholics from killing Protestants. Many were Irish. I don't know how long they were there. Any number between 100,000 and 400,000. Now, RTE, which this program is on RTE, which we're reviewing, they acknowledged, I think it was a documentary, they said 5,000 were killed. The number keeps getting revised down. People do the same thing with the Holocaust, unfortunately. Was it really 6 million? And then the number gets smaller and smaller, and then eventually they say, oh, pff, that never happened at all. The Roman Catholic Church, segments of the Roman Catholic Church at least, kind of, their apologists will sometimes go, the Spanish Inquisition, oh, wasn't as bad as I said, it was a few people here and there, and then eventually it's like, oh, this is complete Protestant mythology, oh, that only came from John Fox, there's nothing from it anywhere else, and whatever. You know, that's what people do with things, and it's gradual tweaking, and so that's, you have to be very careful studying Irish history, and I'm not saying I'm an expert, I'm not. I'm merely a guy who's kind of starting to study it myself. I haven't had the opportunities I've had. Hopefully I'll be able to do that over the next couple of years, hopefully to be able to do it more. But Irish, there's so much pseudo-history from Ireland. And you got to be really careful. My advice, if you're studying something from history, try and get first-hand primary sources, or at least books, as close as possible to the event. And if you're going to study about Ireland, try and get books that are over 100 years old from other perspectives. And it's quite different to what you're being told today. Is it important? Yeah, it's very important to understand. Blaming the British Empire for every single issue in Ireland is naive and foolish. The problems in Ireland for centuries have always come from our hearts. I'm sure at times outside forces have done stuff here and there, but much of the problems, majority of them, they've been our own creation. In the same way Venezuela today has to own up for its own problems and not go blame the United States. Oh, but the CIA. You wanted socialism, you're going to get it. You want to make the state God and control of everything? Look at Venezuela, look at the state it's in. And a couple of years ago, people like Jeremy Corbyn, who is the leader of the Labour Party and scarily might become Prime Minister of Britain in the future, you know, they were singing the praises of Hugo Chavez. Very much a darling of the left. But anyway, let's get back to our program on this.
Where do you go from here?
Well, I mean, if you look at the percentages there, it's a perfect symmetry with 1983. It's a complete reversal. So it was 2-1 in favour of the Eighth Amendment in 1983, and now it's 2-1 against it in 2018, so 35 years later. And so the pro-choice side was in a very similar position in some ways to what the pro-life movement is in now. It's a minority of one-third. So what did the pro-choice movement do? Well, it regrouped and it said, OK, we've got to go forward from here, not fold up our tents and go away. So it persevered. And 35 years later, here we are with a 2-1 result in favour.
And so what do you do now with that result?
Well, I mean, we have to do the same thing that the pro-choice movement did, which is to not fold our tents, not go home. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, even if the vote had been 99-1 in favour of repeal, the right to life of the unborn is still there, even if the law doesn't recognise it anymore. And so if you look at the pro-life movement in other countries, it hasn't gone away. It's still there. So in places like Britain, you've got people like Nuala O'Loan, who, of course, is former police ombudsman in Northern Ireland. You know, she would be a strong, you know, pro-life voice in the British Houses of Parliament. You've got people like Lord David Alton. Obviously, in the United States, you've got a lot of pro-life politicians, even though Roe versus Wade was passed 45 years ago in 1973. So
you're saying, despite that result, you're not going anywhere, but there are
any
people...
More than the pro-
You say, despite that result, what is a result? You know, what do you want, Claire? You want them to go away?
Choice movement.
But there are people who say you should fold your tent, and there are people who say you're not representative of anybody, and that's what the result should tell you.
You're not representative of any. You know, people say that. Oh, well, you know, RTE aren't saying that. It's very much the message from the Irish media, the leftist Irish media. Is you should go away. Just go away. We don't want to hear anymore. The debate is over. This was almost constantly in every speech I heard. It's over. I'm so glad it's over. 35, I don't know how many years between, you know, 1983 when the Eighth Amendment came in and now.
What do you say to that?
Well, you see, that wasn't said in 1983.
No, well, what was said at the weekend?
Yeah, well,
that's what's important.
I mean, that's kind of alarming, really.
It is alarming because it's like not only are they saying, okay, women can kill their child legally by law, it's now also being said, oh, apparently this result means, oh, you need to go away. You need to go away. Yeah, it is kind of, Ireland doesn't believe in any kind of debate. For especially the Irish media, and I hope and I pray that all the people will. I don't have the time to go through and stuff like that. And if people can point me towards real journalists on this island, on top of the Republic. I mean, I'm sure there's some in Northern Ireland, but I'm not aware of them because the Irish media is just drivel, absolute drivel. I mean. And has been for a very long time. Standards, journalistic standards, are abysmal. And I don't know how long they've been abysmal. People don't know how to research a story. And it's not unique to Ireland, I suppose. But I think it's much worse here. At least in places like the United States, you'll have people who will do investigative journalism and things like that. You'll have, you know, the likes of... You know, Ben Shapiro and, there's not a long list. There's even a few people here and there in Fox. Not a fan of Fox or anything like that, but I'm just saying that there's a few people here and there. You'll get some independent people. Standards aren't great, don't get me wrong. But, some people on Breitbart, and I mean some people, I don't like every single author on there, but you know what I mean? That there's some degree investigative journalism going on at the moment. Look, and I don't agree with everything he does and every position he takes, but Tommy Robinson is, all he was trying to do was cover the rape gangs outside the court case I don't know the huge amount of details. I haven't been following much about Islam actually recently. I'm just haven't had the time. I hope to go back to it at some stage. But he was outside just live streaming and stuck in the prison faster than his head could spin, and he got 13 months. And, you know, very much his life is in danger because, and do I agree with everything he holds to? No, but this is a travesty. What law did he break? He wanted to cover the fact that there's these grooming gangs, you know, the massive case in Rotherham. I think there's one or two others, but I'm not somebody who spent a lot of time looking into these issues. But to bring any kind of media coverage to the rape crisis, you know, the Islamic, and they are Islamic, and this is, you know, these true teachings in the Quran, Hadith, and all this kind of stuff. They see women unveiled and without the hijab and all that is fair game. They see them as a spoils of war. And plenty of scholars of Islam who've looked through this, people like Robert Spencer and all this kind of stuff. Yeah, I did do a critique of Robert Spencer because I think, well, it wasn't Robert Spencer, it was actually one of the writers for Jihad Watch. But anyway, that have covered these issues, and not just Robert Spencer, many other people as well, people who come out of Islam. But I digress. Okay. And what is our Christian response to this? We share the gospel with them. Always the same. The gospel, the gospel, the gospel. And point out that their greatest deeds are but filthy rags and they need a substitute. It was one of the things I said to one of my Muslim students. I asked him a bunch of questions and I just said, you know, asked him about who is God and does he demand moral perfection and all this kind of stuff. And that's where you start. They're monotheists, okay. They have a problem. They know they're sinners. Everybody knows the law of God's written in our heart, but we suppress the truth and the righteousness, but we know we've broken God's law. And we need to bring the law to bear that they see that more clearly and that they be brought to repentance and that they see, the Muslim sees he needs a substitute. He cannot be perfectly just and righteous before God. And this is the problem he has. He needs to be clothed in the perfect righteousness of Jesus Christ. And it's amazing when they bring on, you know, the pro-choice, going back to the thing with David Quinn and the Iona Institute and Claire Byrne, the pro-choice see blood. They see blood in the water and they are going in for a kill. That's what I see.
Because that's something I felt very strongly in the last couple of weeks. I mean, you look at together.
And David Quinn was very respectful, but she bumped in and Claire Byrne really should have left David Quinn actually speak, but didn't get a huge amount of time.
For yes, nearly 100 groups, you know, joined together. And a remarkable thing that we saw no breach of that during the campaign. I'm sure there were rows behind the scenes, Alva, perhaps not.
No, actually,
but okay, fair enough. We never. So I look at, we'll say, the Iona Institute, and I think to myself, well, first of all, why is it an institute?
What in the world? And this passes, I don't know. This is, it's not the only reason I don't have a television, but this passes for argumentation. Would you get away with that? Yeah, you would in some countries, but it's just like, what? Why is it an institute? What? For crying out loud, there's lots of groups called institutes. Let's continue.
Who are these people that are sort of the moral guardians of female nether regions?
Who are these people? Just kind of maybe Google them. I mean, again, the Roman Catholic group, I'm not a fan of any Roman Catholic groups, but you know, they make him sound like some kind of nefarious group. Why, you know, and the left always get away with this. They turn to kind of conspiracy theories without dealing with, let's debate, who are these groups?
And the apparent evil that is therein. Now, don't get...
The apparent evil. Again, it is talking about, just quoting from the Irish Independent, who I think is she a columnist for? I'm forgetting. The second, this is in the Irish Independent. No, it's actually, she was with the Irish Examiner, sorry. The Irish Independent says, Shona Murray writes, and this is one of the abortion pills that they believe will be used in Ireland. There's two abortion pills. The second one, there's the first one and the second one. The second one, it says, the second one, misoprostol, I'm probably mispronouncing that, makes the womb contract and triggers the loss of pregnancy, similar to a miscarriage, similar to... It's causing a miscarriage, which is causing intentionally the death of the child.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying
reductionist
People who are against abortion are perfectly entitled to have view represented. But I do wonder.
But there's always a but at the end.
Whether they're now happy that that view was represented in the majority
I have to come back in there, because Save the Eighth and Love Boat were the two big pro-life groups in this campaign. Iona was not, but we seem to have some canvassing. But Maria Steen was obviously on this programme too.
Okay, I'm just going to fast forward this because... Okay, I want to look at this response, and this is one of the things that I worry about. There's a woman on here. Was this? Let's bring her on now. The other no voter. I'm gonna call her just a no voter. She's not a no campaigner. Because let's respond to this. And I think this is almost worse. I don't know. Could you say it's worse? This kind of on the fence. How can you be on the fence in this issue? But anyway, let's play this.
I would imagine that if I was on the yes side, which I was just a no voter, I wasn't campaigning for anyone, but if
I was a no voter, okay.
If I was on the yes side, I'd be thinking this is even better, that all the groups, no matter how distasteful or you disagree with them entirely, that they all had their views heard, and that even at that, that people listened and they went, right, we've heard what you have to say, Iona, we've heard what you have to say to all the pro-life groups, and we're still deciding decisively by 2-1 that... we want this. You know, I think that makes it actually even more of a victory for the yes side. And, you know, if I was on that side, that's what I would be heralding, and not kind of saying, let's shut them down. I'd be saying, let them talk away, because guess what? Irish people want this here anyway. That's how I would be looking at it.
What's your view, Benjamin? Do we have two tribes?
No.
Yeah, it's like... I don't know where to start with that. She is kind of, okay, she said she voted no, which is at least that. But it's kind of placating the other side. Look, the entire, how much of the media is again, unfortunately, look, people can blame the media, people can blame the institutions or the politicians, whatever. The politicians there represent the people. Can't just, it's politician. How did they get voted in? Media. How does the media stay afloat? It's not just big donors. There's some level of people read this rubbish.
The two tribes coexist if we have them.
No, the fabulous thing about the weekend for me is that we don't have two tribes. We have a nation. And maybe we have a nation for the first time.
Yeah. We don't have two tribes. What's it saying? You know, it's like, two different views.
You know, where on an issue that was had been so divisive, remember, yes voters were 80-year-old farmers in County Clare. They were men, they were women, they were, you know, women with PhDs. They were us, they were everybody, you know.
Unborn children, were they they don't get a vote. But anyway. I know, you probably say, yes, I'm not advocating for under 18s to have the vote, but what I'm saying is, they're not everybody. And, anyway.
This was happening all over the country. Of course, there were some demographic differences, but they were much more minor than what brought people together. And what brought people together is a transformation in Irish life. Alva spoke about this, you know, but it's really worth going back to it, which is that we now talk about our own reality. What we've done is we've stripped away this illusory Ireland, where Ireland was supposed to be a certain thing. And you might think, oh, well, that's just fantasy, it's innocent. It wasn't an innocent fantasy. We locked women up. We locked children up. We punished people.
We locked women up. We punished. What are we doing now? We're punishing babies. We're killing babies. We're allowing for the killing of babies. Oh, how do you fix the abuses and the of the past? Oh, well, it seems more of the same, but...
Shamed people. We tortured people to keep this fantasy going.
Well, you're going to torture babies to keep your fantasy going.
And it's over. And, you know, I don't care whether you regard yourself as conservative or liberal or in some kind of tribe.
There are no... I'm not aware of any conservatives in Ireland. There is no right wing. There is no... Everybody's at, you know, at best a centrist, you know, or far left. It just depends on how left. That if you're curious about the political spectrum in Ireland, it's... You just wouldn't get elected if you were a fiscal conservative or something like that. Just not going to happen. You know, you get elected. It's like whoever can promise the most free stuff. That's a general election here.
That is an incredible thing for us to have finally achieved. Almost 100 years after we set up a state, we can go into the centenary of the state saying, look, we're good and bad. We have a hell of a lot wrong with the place we have. But let's look at what we've got. We can talk about our own reality. We can come together without being tribalized in the way that populist far-right politics has been tribalizing democracies all over the world. It didn't work here. We withstood it. And we have a whole new generation.
No tribe. You know, no, so we're all one. We're here's a view, and seems like bye-bye the other side.
Of brilliant young people who've got involved
in politics. If I can respond, Claire.
Wonderful, wonderful young women, young men. Who have been caricatured relentlessly in a lot of media as snowflakes, as people who exist in echo chambers. They weren't snowflakes. They went out. They took the heat on the doorsteps. They were not in echo chambers. They went out. They listened.
You talk about social justice. I don't know who he's talking about here, but anyway.
They talked with respect to people who were not supposedly in their tribes, and they influenced people. And I think, you know, for the first time, really, this feels like a republic in which everybody can hold up their passport. I thought it was lovely that so many people went to the polls holding up their Irish passport, because for a lot of women now, this is the first time that their Irish passport, where it says nationality, says Irish, and there's no asterisk that said put female. Everybody is...
Oh, what disgusting. Just like, oh, but female. What? Again, does the father of that child have a right to kill that child? And this kind of feminist virtue signaling from, it's, I don't know what it is. It's just men just seem to be, it's the same with kind of self-loathing, you know, oh, because you got white skin or something like that, all white privilege and all this kind of nonsense. Ugh.
Now, on an equal level, okay, constitutionally in society.
Except for the unborn child. The unborn child is not in an equal standing anymore. And because this modern Ireland hates motherhood and parenthood and children so much, it just, yeah, it's just, hate. Everything is, God says one thing, it is anti. It was the same with, you know, and there's a sense in which the marriage referendum and this abortion referendum are connected. It's rebellion against God. God says one thing, and we're going to change it. And it's not going to end here. And how long this can last, this isn't going to last forever. You think a nation that shakes its fist in this manner, in the face of God, can stand? I'm not saying, you know, something bad happens, that's whatever, but... The Irish nation has no fear of God. And the sovereign God of the universe still judges nations in various different means. And it can be in famine, can be in economic collapse. And again, I also say this, you know, like, you know, after the 9/11 tragedy, no Christian preacher should be kind of going, hey, that is the quote-unquote judgment of God. We don't have chapter and verse exegy. We can show positive examples of God's judgment in the Old Testament, things like that. Yes, we should preach. Yes, God does still judge nations. And gives us far less than we deserve in this life. He still judges nations. But at the same time, we are all sinners and we shouldn't be going because somebody has, you know, one nation has a worse than another nation, therefore it's the judgment of God. We've got to be very careful about that. Unless you repent, shall all likewise perish. We shouldn't see ourselves as morally superior to anybody. We're all sinners and fall short of the glory of God. But there is a sense we should tremble as a nation. In the same way as rebellious Sodom and Gomorrah did. For God's judgment on this nation. May the Lord be merciful on this nation. And look, and in a large sense, people could be right to point out the Lord's judgment is upon this nation in the hardening of hearts. Read second half of Romans chapter 1. That in itself is a hardening of the heart, is a judgment of God. And certainly you could point out that as a present example. Not only are they saying, you can kill your child if you're a mother and it's in the womb, but it's also, we are the morally superior ones. So they talk about don't inflict your views on others. They are erecting their own Ten Commandments and they're erecting their own view of the state determines what morality is, which is statism, and the state becomes the God. And this is this was horrifically seen in regimes, you know, communist regimes, where the leader of the nation or the state or whatever was seen as like a godlike figure. Because of the law of God written in our hearts, because the heavens declare the glory of God, we know from nature, we cannot deny that God exists. Because of the way we have been hardwired, we will worship something. We will bow the knee to someone or something. We will either bow the knee to the true God of the universe or bow the knee to a God of our own imagination.
Really good thing.
What is it that you take issue with, what he's just said?
It's a little bit too happy-clappy for me, frankly. If you take a society like Britain, there's 200,000 abortions a year in Britain, so it's one abortion for every four live births. It's about the same in France. It's about the same in Sweden.
Well, there's no point in rerunning the debate now, because the debate has been had.
But, I mean, that's about...
And notice how Claire Byrne was like, you can't bring that up. You can only just talk about, on this program, how great abortion is, how great it is to be able to murder your child, and how wonderful, and we're a nation, but bring up any reasons against the killing of unborn children. Oh, well, the debate's over. You know, and RT will pretend and patronize you to claim that they are unbiased.
Very sobering fact. And it's not a happy fact, okay? So, I mean, I really hope we don't end up with those kind of rates. I mean, I hope, and I think everybody here hopes that doesn't happen here. But they are very sobering facts, and I'm not sure that British society, or French, or Danish, or Swedish, is superior to
us. Why not talk about Irish society? David? Why are you always... One of the things...
Why not talk about Irish society? Because Irish people are fantastic, or amazing. And you know what? We've been patted on the back so much. Everybody likes us. Oh, the Irish are amazing. Why? Why are we amazing? Because we're, you know, countries around the world like us because you're the party animal. Yeah. That's the Irish. That's what they're like around the world. What do we do? You know, seriously, what contribution? What is so... And you say, oh, do you love to say, I do. But we celebrate Irishness with kind of like this kind of gimmicks and what is it? Festivals often get drunk. There's nothing to be proud about in that. If you produce things, make products, you know, start businesses, whatever, great.
Things that happened for us is that we finally grew up as a society where we said, we are ourselves, we are not exporting our citizens.
Except
we got over a kind of colonial mentality where we're continually expecting somebody else to do our jobs for us. Surely we can actually reflect on the fact that Irish society came together in an extraordinary...
Well, you'd always notice, like, okay, she'll say in a second, no, don't talk over each other and all this kind of stuff. It's okay for a yes campaigner to talk over a no campaigner, but not the opposite way around.
But it came together in 1983. Very difficult thing.
It came together in 1983. Yes.
We did a very difficult thing and did it well.
Yeah, we won't be able to hear anybody for talking over. Mary Lou, you want to come in?
So here's my assessment of things. First of all, I think huge congratulations to Alva, to Orla, to Gráinne, to every woman, every man who knocked doors on behalf of Together for Yes. And acknowledgement also for people who argued the opposite side of the case. And David...
Who were booted out of the party. Oh, yeah, you know, there was two of them who weren't allowed to... I think they've been disciplined by the party. Look, this is Sinn Féin. This is Sinn Féin... Mary Lou MacDonald is speaking here. Again, Sinn Féin... IRA. If you think of Sinn Féin, just think of the IRA. They may not be butchering people in exactly the same way they did, but now they're doing it politically. It's, you know, they're a disgusting organization. And people have accepted it more and more and more on the name of peace. It's basically saying what? And that you have to appease. They were letting the government in Northern Ireland, which was a colossal mistake. I can kind of, from a certain viewpoint, understand why certain people went into government and things like that, but it was a mistake.
Says that he's now going to regroup and they're not going to pack up their tent and all the rest of it. But I would suggest to you that what's fundamentally changed now is that the need for a campaign is actually over. Because, you see, before the weekend, those with what they would describe as a...
More the same message. Go away. The need for a campaign is over. It's done. It's finished. Goodbye. Bye.
Pro-life position had not alone their own position vindicated in law, they had in fact that position as they understood it enforced on women across the board. What has now changed is not for those citizens who are pro-life or who describe themselves in that way and for whom abortion will never be an option. It would be unconscionable for them. I respect that.
This nonsense of all your... No, you don't. Oh, I would never kill my child, but it's okay if you do. Are you serious? To consent and give the thumbs up to somebody else doing something sinful is to partake in that sin. And we're going to look at it in a second, some of the articles. We're just going to finish up with Mary Lou MacDonald and just responding to her.
But what's changed now is that they don't have their way or their will imposed in law on every woman in this jurisdiction.
So what's imposed on the unborn baby?
I think that that is a good thing. I think that's at the essence of the...
You know, just the hypocrisy drives me crazy. I mean, they talk about imposing their views on others. This is a group that... And if they want to have a new start and say that we have nothing to do with the past anymore, well, you know, maybe rebrand and have a new name or something like that. They got their views and, you know, their nationalist views, and they killed for it. They bombed for it, women and children. And this is the group coming to us in virtue signaling. This is Sinn Féin. This is Mary Lou MacDonald. And I've never seen any remorse for their murders. up and down the country. Actually, if anything, they still justify it. Let's look at two stories just to finish off. This program and another sad. See, I think it's like around the world, one of the reasons I cover this as well is because, well, I live in this country and it's I kind of want to do more stories relating to this country. But also, the eyes of the world are looking at Ireland. And there's another story to be told, and I'm sure the people are looking into it far more than I am, of international philanthropists pumping money into Ireland and shaping the narrative, especially in media and academia. A lot of that kind of came out with the marriage referendum. And, you know, of course, you know what Channel 4 talk about? They talk about, you know, some random person getting a Facebook page and putting up ads showing pro-choice views or something like that. And that's what they focus on, of course, yeah, because Channel 4 are propagandists. They're Channel 4 in the UK. Now, two stories that I want to look at really quickly just to wrap up this program. GPs who refuse to refer on patients seeking an abortion will need to respect, quote, law of the land, unquote. And this is a quote that comes from Simon Harris. Long story short, there's a couple of different proposals. And to an extent, we don't know exactly what's going to happen. But in response to, and it seems like there will be up to 12 weeks abortion on demand, and then quote-unquote exceptional cases, whatever that will be, we'll find out in due time. They're being exceptionally efficient, and you know they're going to have summer sessions as well. You know, it's amazing that anything else is not nearly as important. Killing children? Oh yeah, we're going to work overtime just to have this in place. So in this article, this is from the journal.ie. Conscience objection would be provided for under the new regime. Harris said, added that the GPs subjected to abortion would have to refer patients elsewhere. This is important. Some GPs, now again, these positions might change and stuff like that, but this is incredibly worrying. Look, it's horrendous, it's sad, but can you imagine the GP rightly sees this as murder? What are they going to do? If I was a GP, you have to say, please do not kill your child. And say, oh no, refer me to somebody else. You know, again, it's like, you know, a person thinks you're a hitman and tries to hire you, and you say, no, I could never do that. And it's like, could you refer me to another person who's going to help me murder my child? And you say, no. And if you listen to the words of Simon Harris, it would seem that you're going to get in trouble. It says in this article here, some GPs who took part in TV debates said they could not, in good conscience, do that, that they would have to refuse to refer women on. And they would be right in doing that. The law of the land will be very clear on that, Harris said. And what's the law of the land? That they would have to refer patients elsewhere. Now, you have to be aware of sometimes, you know, people covering stories and all that. People shirk, people don't want controversy, and often people back down from positions as well when it comes to legislation. More because they don't want the heat. And there might be a clinic system, and it might not have to go through the GPs and all this kind of stuff, but it is concerning. And then, it said here in this article, he said he expected only a small number of GPs would refuse to refer a patient on, and the vast majority of doctors, this is talking about Simon Harris, the health minister in Ireland, the vast majority of doctors, regardless of personal view, would respect the mandate of the referendum. Yeah, forget your own personal view. Here's the mandate of reformation. It's people can kill their children if they want to. They have to play ball, and that's it. And this is the message over and over. Forget what you believe. If you're against this, no, respect the will of the people. Of course, because the pro-choice doctors in the land really respected the law of the land, which threatened up to, well, it's probably going to change now, but threatens up to 14 years in prison or something like that. And then told them, I don't know, some of them probably did, send them to England or whatever in order to kill their child. I mean, they really respected the mandate. Surely, I mean, is there going to be prison for these GPs who say, I cannot refer you on to another GP who's going to allow you to do this? It's amazing the double standards, isn't it? But anyway, revealed most abortions, this is a headline from the Irish Independent, revealed most abortions carried out here expected to cost in the region of 300 euros. And it says here that it is expected, and the Irish Independent say that this is according to well-placed medical sources. So considering the quality of the Irish media, you always have to take things with a pinch of salt, but it seems to be fairly well-grounded. Now, according to the well-placed medical source, it is expected the abortion pills, which are be used in the vast majority of terminations, will come under the drugs payment scheme, which sets a limit of €134 sorry, for any approved prescribed drugs or medicines. So basically taxpayer money is going to be used in the murdering of children if this report is correct. And then at the end of this article, you can look at this article online. Again, it's the IrishIndependent.ie from the 28th of May. Shona Murray wrote this, and it says here, it's likely medical card holders will be able to access the pill for free. It's talking about the pill that causes the miscarriage and the intentional miscarriage of the child. Murder. Okay, it doesn't make it any better. Just because it's a pill. Could you imagine? And if you think that's okay, you know, are you okay with somebody who gets a pill and puts it into somebody's drink? And, you know, if you do that with a leader of a nation, it's called an assassination or something like that. So it doesn't make it any better. So, and there's a section of people, if you earn under a certain amount in Ireland, you get a medical card. I don't know what the exact numbers are or whatever. So those people who are low, how many of those will be able to go to doctors and be able to get free abortion pills paid by the Irish state? Let that sink in. Oh, we respect you, and you don't have to participate in it, but your tax money goes towards the murdering of children. What kills me is the people who support this kind of butchering and all this will protest and speak out against, like a lot of socialists in the Irish Parliament, against the, say, you know, the Americans coming over and refueling in Shannon and all this kind of stuff. They're against war, against any kind of a war, but they're not against killing of children. And there's a group that needs to be researched by people, the Irish Family Planning Association, but I'm not going to talk much more about that, but I think people need to do their own research on that, especially if people... Are there any real journalists out there in Ireland? I pray there are. Research that group and see how where their influence may lie. What else is there more to say? It's another again, people are saying, oh, I'm celebrating, oh, it's wonderful, people crying and all this kind of stuff, like with tears of joy. Oh, we're not for murder. We're just for the freedom to murder. My computer's up to turning off there. If you're watching Migito TV, that's what happens there. Oh, may the Lord be merciful to this nation. Please pray for Ireland. If you've got any suggestions or things that may be covered on the program, MigitoFilms@gmail.com. This is from Paul Flynn. Talk to you again next Tuesday.